We'll just try and make this work. I want to talk about my ongoing research project, and I'm looking at this about how different management practices affect respiration and gross primary productivity. And by different management effects, I mean incorporating versus surface applying a high organic matter amendment. This is in the form of the spent microbial biomass, and if you were here for Deb's lecture, you would have seen that this is it has a high amounts of carbon, and it's a low carbon C/N ratio. We compared this to a conventional fertilizer, a farmer practice applied at maintenance levels, and we measured it with three eddy covariance stations. And you can see that the middle eddy covariance station measures the farmer practice and the spent microbial biomass on the no-till strip. There's many benefits to the eddy covariance, one being that it provides continuous measurements and it's non-destructive. There's some issues with it too. The one that it's dependent on wind direction, and at our site we have an issue with a predominant wind direction from the southwest. This is caused by our ridge and valley geomorphology. So this implies that for the no-till strip, it's going to sample the farmer practice tilled no-till section more often than it's going to sample the no-till spent microbial biomass. I don't know why it's doing this. I'm sorry, guys. I just know what I did wrong. Okay. You're going to know these slides better than I will. Okay. Nope. Okay, let's see if this works. Okay, so I divided a short time period from April to the beginning of October to look at different canopy conditions. This is a graph. The colors didn't come out as well, it looks like, but of the different canopy conditions, it shows when the plant biology, the roughness length of the soil cover is very different. It's basically weighted average of the green amount of pixels on a time lapse camera. So for the first canopy, you can see how the die down when we applied herbicide and to the local minima, where we tilled it. And then in the second canopy, we can see the green up of the corn followed by its senescence to the beginning of October. So every time I advance it okay. All right, just to get a better understanding of where exactly the fluxes are coming from. Okay, let's see. I used a simple analytical footprint model developed by Corman and Mixner in 2001. The different colors correspond to different stability conditions, and the spatial extent is about the area that contributes 95% to the flux. The big takeaway from here is that the instruments are not reading over each other, so there's no overlapping fluxes throughout the different canopy conditions. Okay, and as I talked about with the predominant wind direction, the no-till station will predominantly sample from the no-till farmer practice. We will thus have incomplete time series when it does sample from the no-till spent microbial biomass. To compare management effects, we need a gap fill or create continuous time series. This will be really useful for if we want to create continuous sums or annual sums. And we thus need to gain a better understanding over the GPP and respiration. It's okay. I think I'm figuring this out. Okay. I have to go backwards to the slide. Oh, I always miss it though. To do this, I looked at two typical default partitioning methods that Ameriflux typically uses. That's known as a part of a larger family of nonlinear regression models. So at night, there's no photosynthesis, and so we're basically measuring the respiration, both autotrophic and heterotrophic. And so what they do is they fit the popular Lloyd and Taylor model, and they estimate the temperature sensitivity, E0, and the basal respiration. And they look at about 15 days at a time. They move it, advance it by 5 days. And then the difference of that genetic ecosystem exchange is the GPP. The daytime is similar, but they look at the daytime data as well, and they do this by fitting a rectangular light response curve to the net ecosystem exchange. I also looked at this completely different type of partitioning method that's called a flux variant similarity. It was developed by Scanlon and Sehu in 2008. It basically relates the high frequency CO2 and water vapor fluxes to a water use efficiency measurements or models. If then using this can build a relationship to figure out how to partition out into the respiration and assimilation. It can also partition the evaporation and transpiration. There are some issues with nonlinear regression. One is that it's kind of biased because it only uses the nighttime respiration and it relates that to a certain temperature range. But we know at night, during some stability conditions, we tend to underestimate the fluxes. Furthermore, that's the very choice of a temperature driver to drive the Lloyd and Taylor models causes hysteresis issues. For example, if you use an air temperature, you'll tend to overestimate the fluxes during the day. But if you use a soil temperature, you'll tend to underestimate the fluxes during the day. And furthermore, these models were developed to characterize the mean on the annual scale, so they don't preserve additional statistics for the subdiurnal or the diurnal scale. There's also issues with the flux variant similarity model, and that's reliant on the water use efficiency. It's different for C3 and C4 plants. In April, we were dominated by C3 plants, and then, of course, during the growing season of maize, we have C4. And again, during the senescence, the water use efficiency will fail because the plants are dying. And this occurred after herbicide in the beginning of June and to the senescence of the maize in mid-September. So I identified what points in time that the flux variant similarity would fail. And I correlated the GPP with photosynthetic active radiation, and this helped me identify the start and stop dates to reject the model. I looked at incorporating the Lloyd and Taylor model with our flux variant similarity daytime data. And I put it into a short 2-day window because we have a larger temperature range and we have double the amount of data. And I looked at the Lloyd and Taylor using different temperature drivers. I then also applied it to the default window size so I can compare it to the default nonlinear regression models for the daytime and nighttime. Just for completeness sake, I looked at a second model where the respiration decreases after an optimal temperature is reached. And so clearly, if we only use the nighttime data, we'll be underestimating the total respiration. And as you can see by the first plot. Furthermore, and you can see how this impacts the daily sums. And it makes it, and using a 15-day window size kind of hides the certain events that happened during the study period. During the tillage events, the 15-day window size doesn't pick it up, and we had about a couple days of intensive heat stress for the crops, and so the typical method to partition doesn't identify those dates. I regressed it just to show that at a daily scale in the half-hour intervals, it's highly variable, and there's not decent models to account for this yet. I wanted to correlate as a function of averaging time. So unfortunately, it takes about a day and a half for the different models to actually converge above a coefficient determination of about 0.75. However, these issues are not as big of a deal for the GPP. This is because the GPP is coherent across all methods. It's because we have a strong signal during the day, and we have a known driver, that being a visible light. You also can see that there's not a huge divergence between the different models. The default models are the green lines here. And it also captures all models, no matter what the window size, captures the daily variability. So then, to bring it back to my original problem, I wanted to separate the no-till section into the farmer practice and the spent microbial biomass. So I simply did this by separating the middle station by wind direction, and I created a continuous time series using the simple short windowed Lloyd and Taylor model incorporating the flux variance similarity data. And so that's the reds and the green. Prior to tillage, and that's right here, the S&B no-till behaved like the northern station. It diverged after the tillage, the first line, and diverged again during the heat stress. So the divergence also supports the footprint model because it exhibits big differences from the northern station. And in conclusion, the GPP is coherent across all methods. The diurnal respiration is highly variable, and we need to figure out better models to account for this. We gain more information with using the flux variance similarity data, and so this allows us to test for better models to partition respiration. It allows us to resolve smaller events and use older data sets. And finally, and I think what's the coolest is that we can separate one eddy covariance station simply by treatment type, even when the conditions don't favor it. All right, thank you.